This is Luxury.
And Diallo.
The hosts of One Song. And we'd like to thank the United Soybean Board for the sustainable makeover of our podcast studio and for sparking discussions on greener Hollywood production. Check out the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how they pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
And now, join Kevin Hart as he dives into the minds of some of the world's funniest comedians. This is Comedy Gold Mines with Kevin Hart.
Welcome, world. Welcome to an all-new episode of Comedy Gold Mines, where we do what? Well, where we get inside the minds of brilliant comedians. And oh, my God, what amazing minds they are. Some of the best minds, I may add, are minds attached to humor. I said it. I'll stand on it. Today's mine, well, it's that plus much more. I know I use this word a lot, and I say a friend, a brother, and you guys are probably like, oh, man, does he really mean it when he says it? In this case, I really do. I really do. I don't say it just to say it. I actually mean it when I say it. A writer, comedian, director, producer, friend, father. I can go down a list. I mean, I'm also going to say a mentor. As well. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Chris Spencer to Comedy Gold Mines. What's going on, Chris?
Hey, man. Thank you for all those wonderful things. But if you were to continue the list, what would be two more?
Two more?
Yeah.
Mechanic. handyman. I think your best quality, you are a high-level connective tissue. To entertainment.
Right.
I don't even want to say to the stars, to entertainment in general.
Right.
You are somehow connected to everything and everyone, right?
It's like weird.
It's not weird though. I think it's a cadence. It's a quality.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Hey, the weirdest connection I made. I got a call from the White House. Hey, Chris. I was like, who's this? This is blah, 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 aide from the White House. Listen, we heard Will Smith is in D.C. and 44 wants to play golf with him. Could you call Will and hook it up? I was like, what? I was like, what made you think I have Will's number? They're like, you got it. Can you hook it up? I was like,
you are that guy, though.
Well, here's the fucking part. They didn't say, and why don't you and Will come out and play with the president? Can you hook it up for Will and the president to enjoy each other without you?
Yeah. All right. So, guys, after I make the connection, what do you guys want us to? How do you want to get to us so we know where to go?
Like, what airport should I fly into? No. Will and the president. Yeah. No, I will come out there and play with the president. No. Like, no, not you. Have you ever heard of Kev on stage?
Kev on stage, the comedian.
Yeah.
Yes, I've heard of him.
So we did a roast for this kid named Tahir Moore. He said the funniest shit about me. He said Chris is the most sought after and wanted man in Black Hollywood. They want him there, but they don't want him in it. We want you to write this and produce this, but listen, yeah, no. You don't need to be. We don't need you in it.
Does it affect you, Chris? Like when you say that, are you at a point where you feel like your talent is sometimes overlooked?
Absolutely. Well, you know what. So, you know, we had children around the same time, and it was kind of around the same time that I started getting a lot of writing gigs. So it was like, okay, there's no need to go on the road. I'll be a writer. And so the writer producer, Chris, became more popular and more sought after than mm-hmm. Chris Spencer, the comedian. So there was a shift. And so now it was great because, you know, like I say in my social media, private school is paid for this month, but I really envy when I see you guys, well, not you, because you fly private, but when I see my comedic friends in the airport coming back from a gig and they're telling stories, I'm like, damn, I miss this. I miss that. You know what I mean? And as of late, you know, which you've told me before, you would produce my special, I am gearing towards being that guy in front of the camera and on stage more often, because I don't want my tombstone to read, Writers Guild of America loves him.
Well, here's a tricky thing with you, right? Like you're no stranger to stardom, right? Like coming out of the gates, Chris Spencer's star rose extremely fast. I mean, you know, you talk about the opportunity behind Vibe when you were hosting the talk show, and we've joked about it for years, everything that came with that. And, you know, right. It was there and then it was gone. And then, you know, Chris Spencer was a comedic talent that was known in LA. That was a guy who, you know, you made various cameos in projects that were done with the Wayans family. Your relationships there has been amazing, and they've always been true to you and your mm-hmm. talent, and you know, you're a popular face, right? So as the years went and you took that back step with the writing, like you said, and the producing, now you're like, yeah, I miss that. Is there still a want for stardom, like for that bug that you had when you first came out and all that came with that? Like are you thirsting for that again, or is it just the success that comes with being a comedian and a headliner and traveling?
You know, it's weird. It's like I try to say it, I want the stardom, but I know I do. Because if me, you, and Chris Rock are at lunch and somebody goes, oh my God, can we get a picture? I don't want them to go, hey, Chris, can you take a picture of me, Kevin Hart, and Chris
Rock? Can you take the picture? I mean?
Yeah. And so I love my so-called anonymity or in my privacy, but I do want that a little bit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I just, you know what? Let me take it back. I want to be recognized as being very funny as opposed to being very nice and witty. And he hosts a great room and he's the go-to guy for this award show. Like, I need to put out a special so people can see me do an hour. Because if you look at everybody that's on the wall behind you, they did hour specials, which set them apart from the world. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Even if it's not the greatest special in the world, there's an audience that goes, yo, he's the guy I want to pay money to go see if he comes to my town. Mm-hmm. I just need the world to know that. You know what I mean? Like, I think I've done a good job with hosting the rooms in LA, you know, being at, you know, Tripping on Tuesday and Chocolate Sundays, and then do the thing in Inglewood with the Savoy, which is great because I'm from Inglewood, and it's great when I could bring people like you and Dave and Tiffany down, because, you know, it's a drive to drive up to Hollywood. And so for me to be able to bring talent back to where I grew up, it's very, very much appreciated.
Well, it says a lot about who you are.
Yeah, but that bug to, and not necessarily be famous, but just be known as a comedian. You know what I mean? I have a lot of slashes. I just want comedian to be first.
Here's a take that I have on it. And it's one that I hope that you realize, right?
Right.
The one thing that you have that us as comedians really want and need, it's a need, is the approval of the peers.
Right.
Right? You as a comedian, you want to be a comedian's comedian.
Absolutely.
You want to be a comedian that other comedians are excited about, that they genuinely love, and that they go, that guy or that girl is funny.
Right.
That funny is attached to your name, and we as a community, we stamp that. We give that approval, right? Right. You have that. And I think sometimes you overlook that and the strength of that, right? Because you're like, yeah, you know, there's a lot of things that come with it in my relationships, and I'm a connective guy, and I'm this, but nothing bad is attached to your name.
No, I agree.
Nothing, like nothing bad is attached to your name. Like, I got some shit attached to my fucking name. I got some fucking murmurs of bad and some mumbles, right? That's attached to my name. There's nothing but clear, crisp volume of good attached to a conversation about Chris Spencer. And I think, you know, when you're saying, you know, you just want to be known for it, I think you're looking just for the success of, you know, of an audience, of your, of something that you can call your fan base.
Because that's how I started.
I understand that.
You know what I mean? And I know that to be true, because when our friends who are, you know, superstar comedians, do a special. And if they haven't answered my phone call all year, the day after their special drops, if I call, they always answer the phone to wanting to know how did I feel. And that really feels really good.
What do you think? Your opinion has your opinion has trumped. I mean, I won't put people on spot here, but right. I run to the Chris Spencer opinion. I need that.
Right.
Yo, Chris, when I'm ready for it, not in the beginning. I don't want it in the beginning.
Right.
When I feel like I'm sharp and I'm ready, I want a Chris Spencer eye. I want
right.
to see what you think. Because when you go, oh man, that bit about, or yo, you're in a good fucking place.
Right.
Oh my God, this and that. That right. to me, that's my certified seal. Cause it's coming from
right.
one of the best in my opinion. Like when we're talking about understanding jokes frontwards, backwards, forwards, sideways, Chris Spencer is the definition of that when it comes to mm-hmm. just really embracing the craft right. and doing it well. Chris Spencer is a clear-cut example of that. And I think that's why, you know, you get those first ring pickups.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, I love it. I just want to get to the point where I try to figure out who is the Chris Spencer for me. Mm. You know what I mean? That's why I at least got to, you know, I did a Showtime special that I think only played in Long Beach and parts of New Mexico. So I need to go do an hour so people can see me do a rock an hour. So people can see me rock an hour.
Yeah.
And then I can have Harry and Joey call me or Buddy Lewis or whoever, you know, we deem as that guy to go, yo, that shit was great.
Yeah. And how old are you now, Chris?
53.
I mean, right now you're in a great space. This is that side of life now where, you know, it's what you just said, just echoing it, which is the discovery of you and the things that you want to make sure you're doing to fulfill your journey, to fulfill right. your purpose. And you know, I think that in our conversations, you voiced that you've helped a lot. You've done a lot and helped a lot of people, and those people have found success. You just now want to put that energy right. into you, and I get that. I understand yeah. that. I really do.
I want to get my Larry David on,
which makes sense. Do you think that was Larry's thing? Do you think was that Larry's reason?
I don't know. I think it kind of happened coincidentally and accidentally because, you know, he shot that special on HBO, which was kind of like a, I don't know if it was a put pilot or whatever, where he was showing what it would be like for him to get ready to do a special. And they were like, yo, we need to do a series about this. And I think he was like, that's not what this was for. And then it became something bigger. So I like to use him and, you know, say what you want, you know, well, the word Louis C.K., you know, there's the negative about him, but then he did the same thing going from writer to back in front. Judd Apatow is trying to make that transition again. So I know there's possibilities for it to happen.
And when you say that, I believe that you can separate the talent from the problem. Like, so when you say right. Louis C.K., we're not speaking on the problem.
I know, but there's people going, yeah. ugh, yeah. you know what I mean? There's some names.
I get it. Say. Do you think now with where you are in the writing, directing, and producing, I mean, is there any passion that's attached to any of that you think fuels this desire of finding the Chris Spencer or completing, you know, the task at hand of, you know, me and my journey to success? Are any of those things checking those boxes for you?
Absolutely. So, you know, I've been a TV host, I've been a TV writer, and I've been a TV director. I'll be directing my first film this year. And so I like everything I want is happening for me. Mm-hmm. I just know that that last bubble has to be our mm-hmm. special, whether it be Netflix or HBO or whatever, just so people can go, oh, cause like I'm the you know, it's hard to do a special when you're doing 20-minute sets, Laugh Factory, Comedy Store, Improv, as you know.
Absolutely.
You have to go on the
road. Absolutely.
And so my television work has hindered me from going on the road because, you know, at the level where I am in terms of popularity, I make more money at home, right? And so I had this conversation when I was with Dave Chappelle at Yellow Springs with Louis C.K. because I had just performed, and he's like, "Well, what are you doing?" I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "That fucking set was incredible." Like, and he punched up a couple of jokes, and then he said, "Why aren't you on the road?" I said, "Well," he said, "You're too good to be at home. Mm. You're in Hollywood." He's like, "Fuck Hollywood." I go, he dissed me and gave me a compliment at the same time. I said, "You know what I'm writing and producing is?" He goes, "Writing and producing what?" "What the fuck are you doing that's better than that?" I was like, "Well, you know, I just can't go on the road right now and do and for $3,500 a week because I'm doing." He says, $3,500 a week is going to get you $100,000 a week. You have to make the sacrifice. All of us made $1,500, $2,500, $3,500 until we made $100,000, $200,000 a week. So that's what you're supposed to be doing. Fuck this writing and producing shit that I don't know about. I was like, "Sir, there's this network called BET. You're being racist. They love me."
But it's right. I mean, listen, sometimes you need to hear that, though.
No, it was great to hear.
Sometimes you just need to hear it.
It was great to come off stage that day and for Dave, Chris Tucker, Bob Saget, Donnell Rollins, and Mo Ammer just all to run up to me and go, "Yo, what are you doing with your life?" And I was like, "I'm punching up jokes for the Emmys." If he has a commercial for Groupon, I'm helping her rewrite some things.
But this is, I think it's also, man, what I find exciting about what you're saying and what you're doing is that it's another stage.
Yes.
It's another stage, yes. Right? So I forgot who broke it down to me, man. I was talking to somebody and they broke life down to me in quarters. You know, like you got right. The first, second, third, and fourth.
Right.
And when they told me this, told me I was in the second quarter, right, of where I am now. And I was like, "Wait, what?" And I was like, "What do you mean second quarter?" It was like, "Yeah, you're 40. Like, this is like the second quarter. Third quarter is like, you know, 50s. When you get to like 50, that's the third quarter."
Absolutely.
And the fourth quarter, you know, that's like 65.
Seinfeld.
To 80, you know, when you're in the fourth quarter. And I was like, "Damn, 65 to 80, they're like, "Yeah, I mean, that's basically when you just setting up for death. Like, you just kind of,
right,
you just preparing for it. Like, you know it's coming, so you're just doing less. But you got to just find the new in each quarter."
I love
to ignite, you know, this next version of yourself. So, you know, in my 40s, I'm now finding different energy of life and reason for me to continue doing what I do. I'm finding different levels of love, right, for different things, right? And you saying, "Now I want to go to a stage. I want to get back to this and I want to do this for me." You're finding a new purpose and reason for you to perform in this quarter.
Yep, I love that.
It's a dope ass breakdown, man.
This is Luxury.
Andy Allo.
The hosts of One Song. Shout out to US Soy and the United Soybean Board for supporting this podcast and for giving our recording studio a sustainable makeover.
Just like music is made of notes and beats, each eco-friendly choice we make contributes a single note that completes the overall melody. That's why Heartbeat and US Soy are teaming up to lead the discussion around greening Hollywood. We're talking slashing the carbon footprint of production with soy-based alternatives like soy-based inks for printing scripts, soy foam for soundproofing studios, and even biodiesel generators to power sets.
To see our podcast studio transformation, watch the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how we pulled the whole look together. It's all on @HeartbeatAudio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
You're talking about your first movie that you're directing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is directing the thing that will be of leisure? Like, you know, if something, the right thing comes along, it's cool and I'll do it. Or could you get bit by the bug? And if you do, there's no shot that stand-up can happen because right. a directing thing will take you off the fucking table, Chris, for a year.
Right.
6 to 8 months.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I think at least for this first half of this third quarter, it will be directing this movie. And with the success of it, will let me know more. You know, it is something that I'm interested in. I see that there really isn't that many black comedic directors. You got Tim, you got Malcolm.
Not at all.
Right? And it's like there's a hole right there. We used to have Keenan and Townsend, but there's like, who is our black film comedy director? Like, those other guys are kind of hybrids, you know, Malcolm Lee, Tim Story. But like, who is our go-to comedy director? And I was like,
we don't have one.
There is a lane that I could go jump in right now. And so I was blessed with, I wrote a script, my partner, Eric Daniel and I, and we sold it. And this guy, it sat on a shelf for a while. And then another company came and gave this guy $100 million fund. And one of the first scripts they wanted to do was this script. And I was like, let's go. And so we attached Wesley Snipes, J.B. Smoove. Well, let me tell you what the movie's about. So on my poster, it says, not from the makers of Magic Mike, right? it's basically the Full Monty meets Magic Mike, where these older guys get back together who used to be basically male exotic dancers, right? You know, when you're in Vegas and you see Thunder Down Under. So imagine the urban version of that. And right now the title is called My Magic Johnson. Now, how long we're going to be able to keep that, I don't know, but we're going with it. And we have Gary Owen, Faison, Tiffany, Lorenz Tate is on. Well, hopefully, if we have Lorenz Tate money, he'll be on board. And we got some surprising cameos. And the script is very cute. It's a love story. But it's also a great ensemble piece with these guys getting back together after 20 years.
And I mean, Chris, you're going to eventually have to say.
I know.
I'm either going to do this or I'm going to do this.
Chris Rock said the same thing.
You're going to have to turn one switch on. Mm-hmm. And turn one off, because your opportunities, they're never ending in this town,
right?
When it comes to creative, you're always going to get an offer to be a part of something creative. I mean shit, I tried to make you an exec
to run his whole company. I was like,
I said to Chris Spencer, there was a position that we had on our Laugh Out Loud streaming platform. And, you know, I was looking for a creative exec, you know, somebody that could come on and that could spearhead us in getting young, new, great comedy IP, right? Development. Somebody that could outsource and figure out how to bring in these ideas and oversee them and help developing. And I was like, Chris Spencer, this is an opportunity of a lifetime for you, because you, my friend, you are comedy gold. Nobody knows it better than you. This is big business, Chris. This is us now putting the business in show business and it aligns us in a way that we've never been before. What do you think? It was the pitch. I gave it my all. At the end of it, I was like, da, da, da. Chris, he's like, oh man, no, that sounds cool. All right, let me.
But it was two things that I thought of, right? Two things. I was like, I don't want to have a job where I got to wonder what I'm gonna wear tomorrow, right? I'm gonna iron out this shirt and get this motherfucking tie ready, and oh yeah, these shoes, I'm gonna kill them with these. I didn't want that. And then I kept thinking, you as my friend and little brother, I didn't want to be walking into a room and we see all these people ready to meet you, and you go, hey, Chris, hold my phone. Like, that would have fucking killed me. I'm holding your fucking phone so you can go get accolades for some shit I'm helping you write. It's already bad enough, Kevin. You know how bad it is already. I couldn't hold your phone. I'm sorry.
Nobody thinks like you think, man. Nobody fucking think like Chris. I'm offering Chris a fucking job as a creative exec, the head of development.
The company.
He's thinking about I ain't holding this nigga phone. That's it. He gonna ask me to hold his
phone. I don't want somebody to go, wait, find out what Kevin wants to eat first. Like, I didn't want to be that guy. Take Chris. Can you get somebody to take this back? You know Kevin don't like guacamole. I'm like, fuck Kevin and his guacamole. I quit. You haven't even signed the papers yet. Yeah, fuck that. Kevin, yeah.
Chris, you're gonna have to choose one, man.
You're right. I know one of them isn't giving you your goddamn phone. I know one of them.
When you told me, I couldn't do nothing but laugh. I laugh so fucking hard because you're being serious. This is how you think. This is how you operate. This is how your mind works. But for you to do what you really want to do, and really fucking execute. Dude, you're the comedy version of the Dos Equis man. You're like there's no space that you can't fit into. So, you know, if you keep yourself open for those opportunities, they're just going to keep coming, and stand up will always get pushed back. Right. It'll always get pushed back. Right now, I'm fighting for fucking stage time right now. Like, I don't have the time to get on stage and work out. So I'm like, all right, after this next movie, I'm shutting it down for like 2 or 3 months so I can go get on stage. Like, I gotta block out some time.
Right.
And this isn't even for me to construct a set. This is for me to get the energy back of the craft to go, ooh, all right, I'm ready to fucking start putting a set together. But I gotta have time where I can go back and forth to New York, where I can jump on some stages, you know, in Boca Raton, in Florida somewhere, where I go work out, or in Utah. You gotta just, everything else stops when stand-up starts.
And that's been the
nothing else trumps stand-up when we go. And you gotta do that. Like, you, and this isn't the advice. This is us talking as just comedians. Like, you know what you got to do if that's what you're trying to do. You can't double dutch it. Right now, you double dutching it.
Double dutching. It's just hard for me to leave for $3,500 a week. And a kid's school costs $43,000. So it's hard. It's like, yo, you want to go staff up on this show real quick for 8 weeks? Or do you want to go play the Laugh Pickle in Toronto for $2,500?
I think if you put a run together, you should put a real two-month, like Wednesday through Sunday run every week. Like sit down with Vanessa, the kids. And this is something that you've never done. Like, you've done the weekends, you've done the tours, you've been a part of those, and, you know, you're in and out. I'm talking about a real two-month road warrior, Spencer, like.
I'll do 2 weeks for every other third month, but I've never gone just like, you know, Mad Max. Plane, suitcase, show, suitcase, home, suitcase, show. You know what I mean? Like,
you gotta do
it. I've never done that. Yeah,
you gotta do it. Just, I think in doing that, what's gonna happen is the money is secondary. Like, because that's not the thing that you're looking for, right? Like, that's not the W here. I mean, of course, we all want to get to the big numbers and you know. Financial success is not something that we're going to overlook and act like it's no big deal, because it is. But in this case, for what it is that you're doing, you want the energy, you want that feel, you want the crowd, you want your fan base, and you want a punctuation of a special. Yep. You got a road warrior.
Yeah, you know, so I've already started to figure this out, because I'll be doing post as soon as the movie's over, and then I figure I've put the 2 months aside, that the 2 or 3 months aside, that I'm going to go.
Yeah, you know, you have to.
And it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt.
But you're going to be happy that you finally did it.
Right.
Though.
No. And what's great is I'm in a financial position where I can now, you know what I mean? I got a couple of, you know, some films that have been sold, some TV shows that are supposed to be getting picked up. And the fact that it's like, okay, now we can live on we have money, that we have savings. Now I can go pursue my dream. You know what I mean?
That's huge.
It's a great feeling.
That's huge. And let's not overlook that. Like, you know, this is a great, you know, the podcast is dope because it's just great dialogue. Right. But don't overlook the place of security that you now sit in because of what you do that's attached to the craft of being funny. You've went and you've maneuvered this machine of yours in a way that other people are still trying to figure out. Like when it comes to the business side and multitasking that comedy gene, you've taken it from personality to host to behind the scenes to behind the camera to writing to being in those rooms. Like it's like that's the business. That's the other side of it. Now you're going and you're redoing the front part. The back part you've gotten down. You go out there and you road warrior this shit, Chris. It's gonna be game over. Game the fuck over, man.
That's so funny when I tell this to people. They're like, "Are you fucking kidding me? We're trying to get to where you are. I can't stand the fucking road." And I'm like, "Oh, really?" And listen, don't get me wrong. I don't love the road, right? I love when I get there. I love the stage, but you know, from fucking 9 a.m. till 8 o'clock showtime, it's like, what the fuck am I going to do?
Yeah, it's tougher on this side of it. But I think, you know, dude, even if when I go, if you came with me, it's the New York energy for me.
Oh, yeah, like, I love that.
The New York energy for me, and going from comedy club to comedy club is what gets me. Like I need to get in a cab. I need to you know, really like flag down the cab, go from here, or, you know, now, even if I got a driver or something with me, like I need the energy of getting out the car, walking into the comedy club, rushing to the next one. It's nothing like it.
And I love the New York comedians, like Will Sylvince and Keith Robinson. And then, like, when they see you, they're like, "Yo," and they find these rooms that you know, "Yo, what's his name? Got a room in the Bronx. You'll love a salsa con fuego. Come on." Like, "Okay, let's go." "Yo, after you go there, meet me in Queens. There's a Jamaican restaurant. You gotta order some curry goat, and then they'll open up the door and let you fucking rip."
It's nothing but
many fucking rooms till 3-4 o'clock in the morning. Like, it's crazy out there.
It's nothing like it. It's nothing like it. There is nothing like it. And the camaraderie that you find, you know,
Rob Stapleton, all those dudes, "I'll come pick you up. Listen, don't worry about this." It's like, damn, this shit, it doesn't happen here. You know what I mean? I guess it's just a different energy here.
Why is that, Chris? Why is the energy in Los Angeles? It's kind of scattered, in my opinion.
Right.
It's spaced out. Whereas in New York, it's about you do the show and we all sit down afterwards and we're all at this little restaurant and people are cracking on each other and people are telling jokes, people are chilling.
Right.
It's a thing. There's this crazy rapport. I feel like in LA, it's scattered. It's not, it's never really been consistent.
Right. That's a good word. I don't know what it is about that New York energy. I knew something was different when I was at fucking Catch and they said they knew my next spot at the fucking Cellar. And they're like, "Listen, we'll call a Cellar and tell them you're going to be late." I was like, "What? Yeah, yeah. What? Tell me that shit doesn't happen here. If you're fucking late to the Improv, the Laugh Factory is going to be like, motherfucker, pick a spot." Pick a spot. You out there, you're like, "Yo, I'm at Caroline's, and then I gotta go do, you know, I'm gonna run around with you know, with talent over to this other shit in upstate and then blah blah blah." "Cool, listen, we'll call, we'll put some money on ahead of you." I'm like, "Wow."
Yeah, it doesn't.
And then they pay real money. Like, these dudes get real fucking money within a 30-40 mile radius that they live off
of. They get,
like, LA, you better fucking, if you think you're gonna live off these spots, you better be selling cocaine out of the Uber.
In LA, I think they actually might have, like, bonuses have bumped it up. But when I was there, I remember it was $50 a spot. And I think on the weekends, it had jumped to like 75 or 100 a spot. You know, you were doing, that's when you were doing five spots. You know, so on a weekend, you could pick up easily 400 to 500 for the weekend. And, you know, as a young comedian, I mean, shit, you have 4 weekends in a month. So you coming in with close to $2,000 a month from your spots. That within itself, that's your living. That's right. You're living off of that. And, you know, during the week, you got your food spots. You got your paid spots. Maybe the paid ones are $20, $25. Right. But as a comedian, that's how we live. That's how we generate the money. In L.A., it was, you know, it's scattered. The list to get a spot
right
alone is fucking insane.
Yeah,
I've always felt like L.A. was more everybody's treating this performance as it's the performance that's going to launch their career.
I'm
going to
get discovered.
Yes.
Right. You know why? Because it's happened. I've seen people come out here and you know, from Chocolate Sundays, I've seen people go up on, you know, First Impressions or do a spot and people tap me on the shoulder and go, "Who is that kid right there?" And I'd be like, "That's Kevin Hart."
Fucking.
"We want him." I go, "Well, you should take both of us." Like, I'm trying to do, you ever have a little brother that's on your basketball team and they're like, "Yo, Georgetown wants him." Well, you know, we coming together. And so I've seen people, Brandon T. Jackson out of Chocolate Sundays, like I've seen people come there and go, "We want to work with that kid," or "Who is that young lady?" And so people are it's not a workout if it's crowded. Like, I'm going for broke. And that's why you see motherfuckers not grow, because they're doing the same shit over and over and over again, because this is my best. Mm-hmm. And hopefully this manager, agent, executive is going to see me do my best, as opposed to in New York, I'm fucking coming to work out so I can get greater.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what I see.
I mean, Chris, you can't give a better description. That's exactly what it is. It's always, I'm giving my best because somebody in the audience could change my life tonight.
HBO could be out there. Yes. Netflix could be out there.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, I gotta do my best shit at all times.
So there's almost like a hidden fear to work out, because if I don't give my best, or I wasn't my best and somebody was there, then I blow my opportunity for success. Right. And that's in the mind. That's what you're wrapped up on. So you know, you got those younger and older comics that just never wanted to play that game. You know, thankful. I'm very thankful that I was never affected by that. Like, I didn't really give a shit. You know what I mean?
No, you were always great at not caring about any outside distractions, and it used to baffle me. You know what I mean? I'm like, how can he doesn't care what he said?
Shit.
Who's in? I remember that time I brought Eddie to come see you at the fucking Comedy Union. You remember?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was like, I brought you to go up, and I didn't want to go up in front of the motherfucker.
By the way, never told you, blew me the fuck away that you was like, "Yo, Eddie's coming to the show. I got Eddie to come down." And I was like, "What? What you mean you got Eddie to come? The fuck are you talking about? Eddie Murphy, he's gonna come down. He's gonna come down and check you out." I told him, "It's just funny, you need to come down and just see you. So he's gonna come tonight." Who the fuck?
Yeah, he was like, "Who's the next cat? Who's the next cat out there that's ripping the stages?" I said, "Have you heard of Kevin Hart?" "Somebody, I think Ray was saying something about Kevin Hart. I want to see this little motherfucker." And I was like, "Okay." And I called Enns. I said, "Motherfucker, Eddie Murphy's coming to see Kevin Hart." "Oh, okay. What should we do?" I said, "Motherfucker, make a space for about 47 people."
I mean,
all in leather. No, that would have been Eddie in the 80s, but no, when he came and saw
it, it was dope though.
That's a high for me. You know what I mean? That's why I might talk shit. I do enjoy the writing and the producing, because and the whatever you want to call me, the Negro net, because I have everybody's phone number. I put people together, and it's really great when I see two people come together and some magic happen.
You know what too, man? It's also, it's fucking crazy, man, because as you say that, and you're just talking about like your ability to connect and those times when you had Eddie come down. And I remember when I was on your couch and I had to sleep on your couch for a little bit. And I'm like, you are like, you're responsible for the upside of mindset on our black comedians that are you know, that are in that, that have reached that higher level. Because the crazy or not, we all talk to you.
Right.
Right. So, so you get to see when a motherfucker is swaying, like, oh shit, we're going to lose them. Such and such is going to the, way too far to the right. And you, you're the guy that can go, hey man, are you okay?
Right.
And we got to answer you honestly.
Right.
Nah, man, I'm a little pissed off about this motherfucking shit. Got me heated up. All right, well, I can just tell you're a little off. Get some rest, man. Don't let it get the best of you. Like, yo, just know who you are. Like, you're that guy. Mm-hmm. You've been that guy. And the respect that you have generated along the years from being that guy is one that if you ever do decide to push the buttons, Chris,
right,
of need from the people that you are surrounded by, we really have no choice. Like, we're going to be there for you.
Well, you guys have always listened, from Jamie to Chris to you, like Tiffany, Cedric, Mike, everybody has always been there for me. Like, I've never called and you guys have said no.
Mm-hmm.
You might not answer the phone, but when you do answer, it's never been a no. But I have a question for you, sir.
Go ahead.
Because me and David Arnold were just talking about this the other day. Does your wife think you're funny?
That's a good question.
Right?
That's a fucking good question. Yeah. Nico thinks I'm funny. Is
not funny in the kitchen. I'm talking about when she comes to see you work out your show, is she giving you notes? Is she telling you that, that's a little offensive, or don't you think you can get a different, you don't get that?
No.
Oh, that's
absolutely
good.
Not. Absolutely not.
Right.
And not to say that I'm against it.
No.
I'm not like, absolutely not. But I'm like,
that's just not what she does.
It's not what she does. Like, she comes and she'll say what she likes. Oh, but that was real funny. But right. I've never heard from her that joke. That joke is ass.
Right. No. I wouldn't expect that. My wife.
No, like when you're working out, like, yo, that one's ass.
I wouldn't expect that. But like, for example, so there's a joke that I say, which is you're in it, that's gone kind of viral. And she saw it live yesterday and she was like, I don't know. Like, people love it. I'm almost famous again. What the fuck are you talking about? Right? This joke is taking me to the top, lady.
What's the joke? What is
so
the joke?
The joke is about being, you know, so I said, I work in, the person who introduces me usually butchers my credit. So I go, let me tell you guys what I really do. I write and produce in Hollywood. I work with Tiffany Haddish, Kevin Hart, Jamie Foxx, Cedric the Entertainer, all your favorite blacks, right? And so the problem sometimes when you're friends with these people and work with them, your wives become friends, right? And sometimes, you know, like my wife thinks we can do the same thing as Kevin. I go, no, we can't do the same thing as Kevin. Kevin made $87 million last year. Guess who did it, right? And I say, all my friends, I noticed the richer they're getting, they're becoming whiter, right? Like Chris Rock's last special, he had on jeans and a t-shirt. Dave's wearing fucking jumpsuits. Right. I said, Kevin the other day had on a $250,000 watch and it was covered. I go, why? He goes, well, it's kind of a little, it's only one of three. There's only three in the world. And it's just kind of a collector's item. And I don't really need people knowing. And I was like, fuck that. I said, if I had a $250,000 watch, everybody in here would know. You know why? Because the tag would still be hanging from the motherfucker. Right. So then I kind of dropped the mic so you can see the tag hanging. So I said, so, you know, our families go, we do stuff. I said, we're supposed to go to Europe. I said, now, you know, I can do Europe, right? I don't need Kevin to help me go to Europe, right? I'm a multi-thousandaire, right? But my wife was like, you know what I was thinking? We should fly private. I was like, what? Yeah, we should fly private. I was like, you mean don't tell nobody? I'm like, fucking private? I was thinking Southwest, 86 stops, LA, Burbank, Phoenix, San Diego, whatever. So that keeps going. But the joke, this is the part sheet that bothered her. So I say, when we go out to dinner with the Hearts, I don't bring any money. Why? Why? I said, God, I feel God gave Kevin Hart money to take care of me and my family. That's what I feel. She don't like that. So I say,
that's fucking brilliant.
I say, so listen, here's the part.
That's brilliant.
I say, so every now and then we go out. I said, you got to be careful when you have a rich friend because every now and then they won't pay. And it's always wrong. It's always at the wrong time. I said, one night we went to Mr. Chow's, right? It was like 10 of us. Let me tell you something. Whenever you see this celebrity and a group of 10 people, it's usually people that helped him on his way up. Right. And so he always feels like he's giving back. So, you know, at the table, it's like me and I name like comedians that, you know, that once that were there at one time and now we're just kind of mediocre. And so we're having fun, right? These are your friends. And so I said, you got to be careful because every now and then they won't pay. And so this one night, the bill came. I said, no, Mr. Charles has a trick they do. The restaurant is already expensive, but they have a trick. They'll bring out the menus, and then they'll go, you know what? Give us those back. Let us bring out a few things. I said, don't ever let that fucking happen. He did that shit one night. The bill was $1.8 million. So on this particular night, the bill comes, and the lady hands it to me. I go, why are you handing it to me? She goes, oh, I go, you're going to disrespect Kevin? He's right there. Kevin, I apologize for this lady right here. I said, let me tell you, audience, Kevin Hart is my African American Express. I don't leave home without him. What's in your wallet? Not a goddamn thing. Kevin's here. But, so, there's more to the joke, which I'm not going to, you know, tell everybody here.
Sizzle didn't like it? What did she think? Like,
we're not those people that Kevin Hart is taking care of. I go, where's a joke?
You know what though? You're in a space and in a time where, you know, the opinions that we once never had to listen to are front and center. Yeah. They're front and center and they're present. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're constantly rethinking something.
Right.
You're constantly thinking something. Like is that too much? Right. Is that too on a line? And granted, I've said this several times, you know, as I've been doing this podcast, talking to comedians, I get it. Right. I understand why. I get the reason for change and I get being socially aware and conscious. Mm-hmm. But if you start second guessing everything, you're slowly going to just be aggressive and timid at the same time. If a basketball player second guessed every shot,
yep.
Well, when is he actually taking the shot that he's confident in taking?
Right.
Like so the second guess thing is that's real. It's a real thing. So when Vanessa says it, I can see why, because on her side, it's, I don't want people to think that that's who we are after they see the joke. Right. And I had the same thing with my daughter about some of the jokes or whatever that I had. Mm-hmm. She told me, you know, she was just like, Dad, you don't go to school with me. You don't know my relationship with my friends. And you don't know some of the conversations that I have to have. I don't want to have a conversation about something like this. That's just a joke. And I was like, okay. I said, when you say it like that, you made me understand and explain it in that way. I get it, honey. And I'll make sure that moving forward, I'm more aware of you, your world, and the impact that what I do has on it. Because you're oblivious to it.
Right.
So from her side, that's what she's thinking. But, you know, when we up there, we rolling. It's fucking rolling. I can't lie. Kevin Hart is my Black African American Express. That's fucking funny, man.
Right.
That's fucking funny.
Why would I bring money with Kevin Hart?
Why would I bring money? Kevin's coming. And this, you know, when you say the thing about the paying for the bill, I'm notorious for the random dip off. I'll give 75 to 80 in a row. We are 80 in a row. But then there's the one day where I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to pay today.
Yeah,
and I don't tell nobody, but I just leave. I'm notorious for that.
And it's fair.
Ask the guys. Ask Harry, Naeem, Dub, Spank, Wayne. It's like every once in a while, I'll be back and going to the bathroom, and they'll just see me pull off. I'll group chat. And
that's
I'll
where the joke came from. Pure. Yeah,
like, this one's on y'all.
This is Luxury.
And Diallo.
The hosts of One Song. Shout out to U.S. Soy and the United Soybean Board for supporting this podcast and for giving our recording studio a sustainable makeover.
Just like music is made of notes and beats, each eco-friendly choice we make contributes a single note that completes the overall melody. That's why Heartbeat and U.S. Soy are teaming up to lead the discussion around greening Hollywood. We're talking slashing the carbon footprint of production with soy-based alternatives like soy-based inks for printing scripts, soy foam for soundproofing studios, and even biodiesel generators to power sets.
To see our podcast studio transformation, watch the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how we pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Married life, man. Mm-hmm. We can't not talk to each other, not talk about.
Right, because wait, for the people on this podcast, or what is this, a radio show?
Podcast.
It's a podcast. Yes, Kevin Hart is responsible for my marriage. So I love and hate. No, I love the fact that he basically introduced me to my wife one night after the Laugh Factory. I had seen her before. She was casting Soul Plane, and she had come. You were already cast, and I think they were looking for some other ancillary parts, and she saw this fine ass nigga on stage, and you're like, oh, Chris, oh yeah. And then we went next door. Remember, we went to Green Blatt's and we ate, and
this is history.
And it's been seventeen years,
two beautiful kids. Chris, Bella, yeah. I mean, you right now as a father, right? Are you blown away at how fast time has passed? I mean, you know, your kids are soon to be out. Yo.
It's crazy because you remember when our kids were babies, people would always, and cherish this time. It's going to go by fast. You're like, if you don't get the fuck out of my face or help me with this diaper or help me with this tantrum. And now when I see people with babies and I see them struggling with the stroller and the Bjorn, and I'm like, damn, I miss those days. You know what I mean? There's a next door to me, there's a baby, and behind us is a baby. We hear the baby crying, and me and her look at each other, and I go, we're going to wait for grandkids. Don't think anything's going to happen tonight.
Jeez.
But those days, I miss.
Are they talking about going away for college, or are they talking about staying home?
I want them to go away, because that's another thing I regret, is that Chris Spencer has never lived anywhere outside of Los Angeles County.
Really?
Never. I've never lived in any other state, not any other county. So I want them to go have either a Midwest experience, a Chicago, a East Coast experience, a Southern experience, but get out of here so you can have those memories and those stories to share.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Wow.
Like when we go to Martha's Vineyard every summer, that sounds very bougie, but we go to the Vineyard every summer. And I see all these kids from all walks of life talking about what it's like at the University of Chicago, and this one goes to Howard, and this one goes to NYU, and this one goes to Stanford, like, and they all come together and they talk about these experiences. I'm like, I want my son and my daughter to have some other experiences except this, you know, because we go to a school where it's a Hollywood school, you know what I mean? Like, this dude's dad runs this network, and this dude is this agent, and he's his manager. Like,
it's not real.
Go be with some regular folk.
Mm-hmm. You and with that one need, I mean, is there a thing of, you know, I guess you could say life after they're out the house,
right?
You know,
right.
for you and a wife now that that's approaching, is there, like, you know,
I'm trying not to think about it, because it's kind of sad.
It is. I'm thinking about it. Heaven. I mean, I'm going to be talking about college with Heaven in another year.
Is that crazy?
It's insane. You know, and I'm the opposite of you. I'm the opposite. And you just made me rethink the way that I think, you know, because I'm just heavy on the side of, you know, I don't want my baby away. Like, I don't want her.
You know. I don't want them away, but I just want them to have that experience.
No, you know? What you said is absolutely right. You know, in Heaven.
Now, what I didn't say is, if he does move to New York, I'm also moving to New York. I didn't say that.
You're going to. Heaven's been talking about New York crazy. Heaven's been talking about NYU.
Marcus King's daughters went to school in New York, and it was just like, it's a fast pace, and it's a great place to you grow the fuck up.
You have no choice. It will force you to grow up. I just keep leaving USC and UCLA stuff around.
Hilarious.
And just, you know, drive by the campuses when I'm with her. So, I mean, right. It looks nice. Don't it? Look at that out there. I never knew how nice this campus was down here at UCLA. Yeah. What is this? Brentwood? I guess. Where the kids stay at? In these little dorm things? That would be nice. I just try to drop little hints like that are suggestive, but without saying too much. It's just going to, that's going to be extremely tough on me. You know?
Yeah.
When.
Yeah. No, you guys are close. Yeah. No, I mean, I went to UCLA and and my parents lived in Pasadena. So it was a 15-20 minute. I was away, but I wasn't away. You know what I mean? That's not like my parents, you know, I wasn't taking clothes home to do laundry. Like I really had a college experience. So it can happen being in California. I just want them to go meet and feel and see some other things. Yeah,
be as independent as possible.
Go do a year in Europe. You know what I mean? Go to Africa and just don't have, I don't want them to have a similar experience to me by going to school locally.
Have you ever thought, Chris, that your life as you know it, as you see it, I mean, this is a show in itself. You know,
right.
the struggle of, you know, the back and forth and that want for the taste that you once had, and
right.
finding success in the space, and you're happy about it. You're
right.
It's dope. You're right. You're able to do things that you never thought that you would be able to do. And you, I mean, what is it?
It's called trying not to be a hater, right?
Wow.
It's me being this writer, writing for a successful show like our show, Real Husbands, or another show.
And you did tell me about this. Yeah. Yes.
So
yes.
Let me tell you one day that hit me in the nuts. When we had the Real Husbands photo shoot, remember you guys were on that fucking bike? And it was like a bike
yes.
that could fit like 10 people. And yes. I'm looking at all my great friends in this picture. It's you, Nelly, Boris, Kevin. You are Kevin. Dwayne, JB, Nick. And I'm like, fuck, I'm not in that picture. Mm. I want to be in. The kid needs, I need to be in that fucking picture. And so I find myself, because, you know, what's it called? I find myself going, what's he doing now? You know what I mean? Kevin got another move. Not that I hate, but it's like you find yourself watching people do what you do and going, damn, what would happen if I went this other path?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I love what I'm doing. I love the respect I get from young comedians. Like the other day I walked into a comedy club and it was dark and this dude goes, wow, Chris Spencer, OG. No, he goes, what do you call me? He called me a legend. Wow, Chris Spencer, the legend. I was like, who the fuck are you talking about? It made me fucking, I teared up a little bit. Here I am complaining because, you know, I'm not fucking in the clubs. And he's like, motherfucker, you are our hero.
I can clearly understand and I can clearly see why.
Right.
I love the story. I think that's what I'm a story junkie.
Right.
I'm a story junkie, and when I talk and I have these type of conversations, you know, I truly do, you know, I compare it to a story, chapters,
right?
You know, what page, where you at in this right. fucking book right. that you're writing for you, and yours is just so dope because, you know, it can be read a couple different ways. Like, you are successful,
right?
And you're happy with the success that you have. And you are like, but I want to do this.
Right.
And your battle is with yourself.
Absolutely.
And giving yourself the opportunity to do the thing that you want to do that you just haven't really made the real time to go do. And you haven't made the time to really go do it because this other thing
absolutely
fucking just keeps getting better and keeps getting bigger.
Right.
That's a great fucking thing, man.
One of our friends told me to shut the fuck up because I was fortunate enough to marry my second wife first.
Oh my God.
He sees in the picture behind you. You know,
that's fucking brilliant. Yeah. Listen to me. That's fucking brilliant, man.
He's like, your wife is fine. You have a fucking house. You have fucking this. Then your kids are in private school. You married your second wife first. Shut the fuck up. I was like,
he's a genius.
He's a fucking genius.
Yeah. He's a genius.
Yeah.
He's a genius. By the way, he's about to get on the road. I don't know where the fuck he's been working out. That's what, look, when you know how you just said, how the fuck, my how the fuck is, somebody was like, yo, Dave, you know he's in Vegas. He did like an hour and a half the other night. New shit.
Yeah.
Again.
Right.
Where the fuck is Dave getting all this goddamn material from? Mm-hmm. Then I called Chris. Chris was like, yeah, man, I think I'm about to go out. I've been working out. Working out?
Right.
Where the fuck are y'all working out at? Like, it's the same thing.
I don't know if it's a silent competition with you three, but I love hearing you three talk about each other. And it propels and pushes your career. You guys have three total different careers. Chris is fucking Denzel now with these fucking dramas.
It's crazy.
Dave's doing shit in cornfields and fucking putting out specials every 5 minutes. This motherfucker is so great, Kevin, that he's putting out snippets of material with no fucking punchlines. Like, he's just telling these fucking stories and rants, and we're going, this is the funniest shit. Wait, did I laugh? I didn't even laugh. Like the thing he did about fucking George Floyd and the other shit about how Netflix needs to pay him his money. Like, it was the fucking, it was fucking poetry.
He's flying on a different frequency.
Yeah.
There is no catching Dave. There is no trying to do what Dave is doing. Dave is flying on a different frequency. And now that Dave has discovered how to bring what he loves to do to his city and own that thing, that likeliness, that cadence, that I'm employing people here where I live, to our economy is getting better because of this thing that I have, and I'm going to keep it going. The city is going to now have this, this, and this, and I'm going to be the guy at the front of all of it. Like, it's like he's in a fucking another quarter.
Right.
And in this quarter, he's found that thing. He's found that new energy and that new thing that's driving him.
Right.
When talking to Chris, Chris is in that quarter as well. And Chris's new thing is driving him. You know, I was talking to Chris. He was like, yo, man, like, I'm living. He said, like, now, I feel like I'm living, like I'm traveling. I'm just seeing shit.
Right.
He said, I'm just going to see shit, Kev. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. He was like, I'm going to experience the things that life offers. I'm living. And I could hear it. I could hear it in his voice when he was talking about, like, you know, I'm going to come back and I'm going to have shit to talk about, but it's because I'm giving myself a chance to live.
Right.
Like, Kev, get the fuck out, man. You got to go do some shit.
Right.
Go do some shit. And like that energy, like you said, that we give one another, it's everything.
I love watching it.
It's everything. And you know who else, who I miss, man, and I haven't talked to, but who has that energy and just a nice, like, soft, positive fucking cadence of support, but is also great. Fucking Fox.
Oh my God.
Fox.
One of the greatest storytellers of all time.
I say it's between him and Bill Bellamy.
Yes. Yes.
Him and Bill Bellamy.
Let me tell you what Jamie Foxx does that makes you feel like a king. If you're ever in the presence of Jamie and there's another group of people, his introduction of you is fucking ridiculous. Hey, you guys, how you guys doing? Listen, this is Chris Spencer. I don't know if you guys drink water. He was the first guy to purify it, right? Not only did he do that, you see how NASA, that rocket ship is able to stay out there. He created a fuel and you can't go, nah, stop playing, Jay. You sit there and take it. Like, he gives you the fucking best intros in the world. But I say I love Jamie Foxx. Jesus Christ.
Such a good dude, man. He's such a good fucking dude. Do you remember years ago when we used to go to Foxx's house?
Yes.
Do you remember you did? I ended up at Foxx's house because of you.
Really?
Yes. You took me to Foxx's house. We used to play basketball, right?
Great.
We used to have fucking, I don't know what, by the way, somewhere along the lines, quietly, we said, fuck this shit. Like, somewhere at some age, we lost the connective tissue in activity.
Right.
We would do our basketball runs.
Yeah.
We would go eat. We would chill. Like, we had it. You took me to Foxx's house and I was blown away. That was actually my first Hollywood, like, experience of, oh shit, we going to fucking Jamie's house. They said we going there to play ball. Oh fuck, Chris, what time I gotta be ready? All right, I gotta get the car. Oh shit, I'm gonna make sure I'm on time. This is a big fucking deal. You know, I was young.
Right.
I was young, so this was everything. This little thing that you just threw out there, yo, we gonna go to Fox's house. We gonna play some ball over there. To me, it was way more than that.
Right.
This is, oh my God. But that relationship started with you. That relationship started with you taking me over to Fox's house. Swear to God.
Wow.
Swear to God. Like, of course, we saw each other in passing, yeah. but yeah. that's when Fox and I started to get cool.
Right.
Because I went over there and I could play. Right. And that just gave us a different energy.
It's so funny how that is like the equalizer. Like, many comedians have gone over there and we played ball. But if a motherfucker can really play, that really can bring a friendship together. Like, when he saw that you could hoop, because, ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Hart can actually really fucking hoop.
I can play.
That made it, that was a click. You know what I mean?
It really was.
There's some good comedic ball players out there. Corey Holcomb and Rudy Rush and David Arnold. But you don't expect these people to be able to play. And then when they can, you go, oh, shit, okay.
I'll be doing tomorrow. I had Adam McKay on a podcast. Uh-huh. Adam brought up the E-League. He brought up the E-Entertainment. God. And when I tell you, me and Adam just went down memory lane.
Right.
You know, he was my center. He was like,
I remember, listen, the funniest official story that I tell my story.
He said, Kevin, what I love the most about you, he said, is that you always made me feel good. He said, like, you would literally throw a pass at me and it would hit my hands. Right. It would touch my hands.
Right.
My mind would say, catch it. My body would say, grab that ball, right. but I would drop it. It'll go out of bounds. And you would say things like, don't worry, get the next one, Adam. It's okay. You right. never made me feel like an asshole, or like right. an idiot. And there was these other guys that was just so intense and so tough, but you were actually good.
Intense. That we right down there. We thought we were in the pros.
You couldn't tell us anything different.
Funniest story. One of the funniest stories is, you guys, I think we're in a championship, and Will Ferrell was giving you guys a speech in the locker room, and I walked in, and I had never in my life seen, I guess I don't know him, I just know him from the movies and Saturday Night Live, and saw him being serious. I was like, is he serious? Come on, we got to get these boards. You got to block out, man. And da-da-da-da-da. I was like, oh, I'm waiting for the joke. And so that's what was great about that. Just so many different fucking people. The greatest shit I ever seen. Are you ready? Ladies and gentlemen, this is how intense this is. We thought we were really in the NBA. They gave us NBA uniforms. They had NBA refs. We had a fucking nurse and fucking people to stretch us. We had NBA fucking Advil. And so I remember one day, Kevin, we were about to play. And it was during the All-Star game. And All-Star game was in Phoenix. And we watched Brian McKnight sing the national anthem in Phoenix. We played the game. We cut off the court, and this motherfucker was tying his shoes next to us. I was like, yo, he's like, I wasn't going to miss the game. I said, you were at the All-Star game. He's like, fuck the All-Star game.
Man, it was that serious. It was that serious.
So many injuries.
everybody stayed hurt. Yeah. Everybody stayed hurt. Everybody stayed hurt in that league. There was not a – I got to tell this. Uh-huh. I got it, and I went to basketball so I could get here. I also took Chris Spencer to what was the camp? Chris?
Fantasy basketball camp with D Wade.
Fantasy basketball.
That was the greatest fucking 4 days of my life.
I said, Chris, we're going to fantasy basketball.
You remember we wrote a movie? Yes. So for research, yeah.
Yes. And Chris said, why? At the time, like Chris just said, we were working on a script. And this is, once again, another tier in Chris's multi-tiered, multiple fucking version of a career. Right. I can't find the word, but he just, like I said, he's the Dos Equis man in comedy. He does it all. Chris Pitts is a writer. This camp came up. I'm like, yo, I'm just going to take us to the camp. This can give us good shit. To write a story. He was like, all right, cool, bet. We go to this fantasy basketball camp. D Wade was running the camp. Now, fantasy basketball camp is basically this expensive retreat for older men that want to experience a true NBA lifestyle. Right. Within the game. So they had real NBA coaches. Yep. You had real NBA trainers and you had like real NBA. It was like trials. We had our version of the combine. You go to enter the camp. You got to do like this crazy workout, shooting vertical drills.
Yes.
And you get drafted.
Yep.
you get fucking drafted. There's a draft. Holy shit. We got a draft. It was the best thing ever. We was here 4 fucking days. 4 days overnight. I say this to say, somewhere along the lines, Chris Spencer checked out of his normal. Let me tell you, Chris, I come downstairs one day. Chris, what are you doing? They're draining my knee. What? They're taking the fluid out my knee. Who is? They're doing it right here. They can do it. They can do this so I can be ready for the game. Hey, man, you better not let these people get inside your knees, Chris. Chris was getting surgery at this fucking camp. He was icing his legs down. Chris would like have his knees wrapped in ice. Yes. His back would be wrapped in ice. We took full advantage. This was, you know how you get free shit, right? And they like in the shirts, and you just keep going back, and you got all the shirts because they was free. You're not gonna wear these fucking shirts, but you go get them anyway. We used every fucking aspect.
Even them shoes Dwayne Wade gave us.
Oh, my God. They killed our feet. They killed.
My toenail came off. I was like, Dwayne might want to call these people back and get an adjustment. Because there's a part in the toe that rips off toenails. But we didn't give a fuck. We were playing with bloody socks.
It was that intense.
Let me tell you something. We would have fucking went to the championship and lost because your brother, his battery just went out. I said, yo, we had the game right before the championship. And, you know, I was done too. I had the knee surgery. I had ice all over my body. And your brother was carrying us. And all of a sudden, the last day, he wasn't dressed. I said, for me, what's going on? I can't do it today. What the fuck you mean? This is the semifinals. Let me say this part because I know back spasms. I said, what? He said he was having spasms and it was going all up and down his body. And he couldn't. I said, dude, just bring the ball. Chris, I can't play. Because your brother can fucking play. He could get to the racks. He could dish. I could sit there with my little set shot jumper, my sumper, and stay in the corner. When he said he couldn't play, I was like, oh, we done.
Man, when I tell you, my brother stayed in that hotel 2 days after the camp was over. He stayed an additional two days. He couldn't move. He said, dude, I just laid in the bed. He said, Kev, I had you extend the room. He could not move.
Let me tell you what happened, really, right? You know why? Because that game before he almost died, we played you and we beat you. And that's all he needed. That was the feather he needed in his cap for the he didn't need no fake NBA fucking David Stern trophy. He got to play. I mean, that must have been a great experience to be able to play with your brother.
That motherfucker, I was mad.
I was fucking mad. It was real. It was sibling. That's what, if we go back and do that movie, that's what it should be.
I was you fucking motherfuckers mad.
Going, yo, you were really, like, ladies and gentlemen, this was Kevin Hart, Philadelphia, worked at Foot Locker. He hadn't done any movies. He hadn't done a commercial. Him and his brother were going at it, like Seth and Steph.
I was fucking mad. I gave work. I gave y'all some work that game too. And y'all motherfuckers we just couldn't stop y'all. Right. We just couldn't get a stop, man. And it was like, it was so frustrating because I knew what that meant for him. Yes. And he wanted that over me. And when you guys got to the championship, I had to hear that shit.
Right.
I had to hear that shit. He said, you out here. You out here scoring all these points, but you're not leading your team to a championship. That's what a real point guard does, bitch. He was just cussing me out. He was just being a big brother.
Yep.
Every fucking day.
It was great.
That was a fucking great. Shout out to D Wade. I don't know if you do that camp, man, but it's.
We should bring it out here,
man. It is.
I mean, I'm experience. Not gonna play no more, but it would be great to watch others.
It's an experience that I'll never forget. It was that amazing, man. Fucking amazing.
Yes.
Well, C Spence, the beauty of these conversations, man, is that you look up and the time is fucking gone. You know,
I see.
It's only supposed to be a fucking hour. Look at this. It's an hour of fucking great dialogue, dude.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate
this is great dialogue. I want to close in saying, A, dude, you're a goddamn legend simply because you care. You not only care about your craft and what you do, but you care about the other people that share the same love for this thing that you love. And it shows, right? And through your progression in your career, your energy has just never not been positive. So this thing that you now have with yourself and for yourself, it's gonna work itself out. But it's gonna require you to flip that switch.
Yep.
So I just want to tell you, man, be comfortable and confident in knowing that when you do that, you will get the rewards from the work. Like you're going to get what you want. And if the special is that thing, I already told you, man, there's no world where I wouldn't fucking shoot a Chris Spencer special when you're ready to do it. It's not going to happen. You have my word that I will produce your special every fucking day of the week and be proud and happy to do it because you deserve it. So when you're ready, I'm ready. But, you know, dude, you got nothing but good time and energy ahead. I think you should knock out these projects, put your foot in this goddamn movie's ass. Right. And you do give yourself a nice little time to go out here and be a road warrior and let's get to it.
Let me thank you for one more thing. You've actually made my marriage as strong as it could be by allowing my wife and I to have this platform on LOL called Date Night with Chris and Vanessa. Like when I say I tried my best not to work with her, she had scripts, she had talk show ideas and treatments. And I was like, no, no, no. And then she came up with this format. I was like, okay, this could be it. And then when she made the phone call to you and you guys said yes, like it's made us the greatest couple in the world.
That's dope as hell.
It's really like we love is easy. We like each other a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like I still I make her blush.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, damn. And that's from us working together. I always thought you wanted to keep church and state separate. I like that you've given us the ability to work together and we really like each other and we really love each other. So
it's dope as hell. And for our listeners, if you're not familiar with the show, it's on Sirius XM, it's channel 96. The name of the show is Date Night, and it's with Chris and his beautiful wife, Vanessa Spencer. And it's just it's something that I feel that everybody should take a listen to. It comes on Friday evenings on a platform, but it's dope, you know, and they have other couples come on, and it's great conversation, great dialogue, in a way that only Chris Spencer and his wife can do and present it. So give yourself a dose. It's a good listen. Once again, Friday evening, Sirius XM, channel 96. That's Laugh Out Loud Radio. Chris, man, I love you, dude. I love you. You're a friend, your brother, and I mean it when I say a mentor as well. Forever the guy that I'm going to get on the phone when I'm in need of some funny or some goddamn just funny advice. Like, you're the guy. So in return, just know that and stand on, man, you sit in everybody's goddamn mindset in a positive way. Eddie, Arsenio, Sebastian, Joe Coy, Tiffany, Hassan Minaj, Steve Harvey, Earthquake, said, these are all guests that I've had that have mentioned you at some point in the interview. So, you know, that's just something for you to think about.
Because people are calling me like, who the fuck are you? Everybody keeps talking about you. When Hassan Minaj said my name, I was like, I didn't even know he knew me.
It's I'm just telling you, that's impact. That's impact, and that's your likeliness. You know what I mean? It's definitely shown, and it will continue, man. So thank you so much for doing this, man. Much appreciated as always. And this conversation was exactly what I thought it would be. Fucking amazing.
Comedy Gold Mines is a Sirius XM and LOL audio production. Executive produced by Kevin Hart, Ty Randolph, and Eric Weil. With Tastemakers Media, Emil Garner, and Ian McDonald. We'll be right back.
Hi, it's Stephen Colbert, and I'm here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is the podcast of The Late Show with me, Stephen Colbert, and I'm here with my producer of the podcast, Becca. Hi, Becca.
Hi, Stephen.
So what do people get when they listen to The Late Show Pod Show? Let's sell this thing.
The extended moments, for sure, because we run out of time for broadcast, but we have plenty of time on the podcast.
It's kind of like being a live audience member of the show because you get things that no one else hears. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert wherever you get your podcasts.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.